this is an interview with Mr. and Mrs. Tarzan in Guadalajara, Mexico. It is Tuesday, November the 30th, 1976. It is 1:15 p.m. local time. Mr. and Mrs. Tarasoff, do you understand that my name is Kenneth Bruton? I am counsel for the Select Committee on Assassinations of the United States Congress in the House of Representatives. And with me is Jonathan Blackmer, also a counsel to the committee. And that we are recording this interview with you today.
Yes.
Yes.
We've seen your identifications, and we feel that your documents are authentic.
And do we have your consent to take this interview?
Yes, you do.
All right. Now, I'll start with Mr. Tarasoff first. Mr. Tarasoff, for the record, would you please state your full name?
Boris Dmitry Tarasoff.
All right, sir. And your current address?
It's Rancho Contempo, just Guadalajara, Jalisco.
All right.
That would be sufficient.
And your date of birth, sir?
2nd November, 1908.
And your place of birth?
Yekaterinoslav, Russia.
All right, sir. And what is your occupation or profession now?
I'm retired.
And how long have you been retired?
Since the end of October of 1970.
All right, sir. Mm-hmm. And prior to that time, what did you do and for whom were you employed?
Well, I was employed by the so-called company.
All right. And the company is the Central Intelligence Agency?
Well, let's put it that way.
All right. We just want to clarify that for the record.
All right.
And that is of the United States government.
Oh, definitely.
All right. And at which, how long did you work for the company?
About 15 years.
All right, sir. And in 1963, what was your duty station?
Well, I came here from Washington, D.C., must have been the 6th of June, if I'm not mistaken. Or 5th of June, rather, of 1963.
All right, sir. And what, were you on temporary assignment then, or
no,
what?
No, that was to be my permanent assignment. Well,
all right.
By permanent, I mean that you put in 2 years. And if you are not satisfactory, they ship you back. But I managed to survive for about 8 years in the same capacity.
All right, sir. Who did you relieve in your job when you came?
Well, George Miska was my predecessor, so to speak.
All right. And where did you work specifically when you came from Washington to Mexico City?
You mean on permanent assignment?
Yes, sir. I mean, when you were changed, where did you work for?
Well,
for what department or?
Oh, well, I don't know which department. Just
was it with? Were you a translator, sir?
I was translator and transcriber at the same time.
All right, sir.
Because there's a difference. Sometimes they use 2 people for those 2 jobs.
All right. And your duties when you came down in June of 1963 then were as transcriber and translator.
Right.
At the station in Mexico City.
Right.
All right, sir. Now, following, how long did you work inside the station in Mexico City?
Oh, that was on TDY.
All right.
In 1960.
All right. In 1960, you worked in the station. In June of 1963, where did you work?
Well, in the house that we rented.
All right, sir. And was that in Mexico City?
That was in Mexico City.
Right, sir. Do you recall the address of that house?
That was 312, I think, wasn't it? 312 San Borja Avenue.
Right, sir. And did any officials at the American Embassy have that address to know to contact you?
They certainly headed because they were delivering the stuff to me.
All right, sir. Now, did you work at that address with anyone else in the translation and the transcribing of things that we'll get into and identify a little bit later on? Did anyone else work with you directly?
Directly, just my wife was helping me out until she was put on official status.
All right. Now, what did you receive and from whom did you receive it to transcribe and translate?
You mean the names?
Yes, sir. Well, I want to know what you received first.
First, we received a mountain of tapes left over from the previous transcriber.
All right.
And I think they were delivered by Bob San Bernardi, I'm sure.
Yeah, he was the first one.
Yeah.
All right.
First one. But since he had other duties, I suppose they took this Rudy character.
All right. And you don't know Rudy's last name?
No, that's why I say
all right.
There is some sort of association in my mind with the name of Bruno.
Bruno?
Bruno.
Would you describe as best you can the physical characteristics of...
Well, he was rather tall.
All right, sir.
Slim, and probably stooped a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and with sandy hair.
But receding a little bit.
Receding, yes. No particular distinguishing features.
All right, did he, how old a man was he about at that time?
About 45, I'd say.
All right. Did he have any children?
He had two.
And
boys.
And was he was married?
He was married to a French woman who later abandoned him, divorced him, or just ran away from him.
All right.
Because he wasn't supportable in private life.
All right, sir. Now, did you receive tapes from anyone else other than Mr. Fleck or this Rudy or the individual that you named previously that delivered a bunch of them to you? Did you receive tapes from anyone else?
Well, not at the same time, but after.
All right.
What's his name?
Mr. Bright?
Yes, Bill Bright.
All right, sir. Would you describe Bill Bright to me? Was he a young man or an old man? Or?
He was a young man with two or three girls, very small ones.
Well, I think they had two youngsters, the two girls.
Very, very young looking. Typical Anglo-Saxon type.
Blondish hair.
And
sandy hair, sir.
I told him, he was driving in a Volkswagen. Yeah, we have pictures of him.
All right. Now, would you tell me how Mr. Bright would deliver the tapes? Do you know where the tapes came from?
Well, at first, no. I didn't know.
All right. Did you ever subsequently learn where the tapes came from?
Subsequently, yes. During my last 2 years or three, I recollect exactly when.
All right. But can you now state where those tapes came from?
No, I can. I have a very, very good idea where they came from.
All right, sir. Where did they come from?
It was a house that had several recording machines set up. The address, I don't know.
All right. But they were tapes of telephone taps, were they?
Yes.
All right. And you did the specific ones to and from the Soviet embassy?
Right.
All right, sir. Now, would you describe for me the procedure, to the best of your recollection, whereby the tapes were taken from the house where they were initially recorded and how they got to you? What was the chain of...
I know one thing that, for instance, let's say that Bill Bright, he would pick them up. I don't know whether he would pick them up from this, from Charlie.
Now, Charlie is...
Charlie Fleck.
And Charles Fleck was... What was his job?
He was a... actually supervising the workings of these tape recorders. If anything went wrong, he was the fellow who would fix him. If he couldn't, then he would send him back probably from to Washington to be fixed. Or gotten. He wants, how many times I argued with him, and I said, my gosh, give me a better machine because it's breaking down. He says, well, we don't have any more. But eventually I would get something decent out of him. So,
do you know whether or not Mr. Flick monitored both the Cuban and the Soviet wiretaps from this one safe house that you've described?
Well, I wouldn't say that he was monitoring them because his Spanish wasn't too hot.
All right. Were the were the tape recordings made of the conversations from the Cuban embassy at this same place?
I imagine so.
All right, sir.
Because there were quite a number of people working there.
All right, sir. And were the people working there all employed, were they Americans or were they Mexican nationals or?
I think they were mostly were Mexican nationals.
All right. But they worked for the CIA in the interception of these communications.
So, of course, right. They had to be paid.
Did you ever personally go to the safe house?
I did.
All right. And how often did you go there? Did you?
Well, not less than once. Maybe twice.
All right, sir.
If I recollect. But that was in connection with the defection of Raya Kiselnikova.
I see. Was that after the assassination of President Kennedy?
Yes.
All right. Now, with respect to, I call your attention back to September of 1963, some 13 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You were going to describe for me, or I'd asked you, then I interrupted myself, the procedure whereby Mr. Bright brought you the tapes from the safe house.
Well,
would he call you on the phone, or?
Let's put it that way. I'm not sure that Bill was there at that time.
All right.
It could have been either Bob, which I doubt. Most likely it was Rudy.
All right. And Rudy, you don't remember his last name,
no,
but you've described him for me.
So, well, the only name that I can faintly tie in with him would be Bruno, but I'm
right.
Not sure it's his name.
All right, sir. Now, how would you go about getting, how would these tapes be brought to you, or would you pick them up?
No, we would make a certain, would you say, a chain of posts where we would meet.
All right.
Let's say today we meet at this, we try to break it up, because if you come to one place every day at the same time with a bundle in your hands, looks suspicious, doesn't it?
All right.
So,
now, Mr. Tarasov, were these tapes brought to you in briefcases, or?
At first they were brought in briefcases.
All right.
And I told them, by gosh, it could be robbed. It happened once in some place I heard about. So I said, let's make it as inconspicuous as we possibly can.
All right.
So I started putting them in a brown shopping bag.
All right. And you would meet either Rudy or Bill Bright
at the appointed place at the appointed
at
time.
The appointed place, and you would pick up the tapes.
Many a time this I had it out with Bill because I'm standing waiting and nobody shows up. And of course I kept waiting too long, 15 minutes, I said, 15
sure.
Minutes, that's all we get. So I would go back to the house, and then in about 5 minutes more, he barges in and says, where the hell were you? I was looking all over for you. I said, I was standing there waiting for you. So.
All right. Now, sir, do you recall receiving tapes in September of 1963? Of any intercepts of telephone communications with the Soviet embassy?
Well, every day.
All right. And did you ever receive one in which an individual called the Soviet embassy and said he wanted to talk to him, and you later had another telephone intercept on the same individual?
Yes, we hit that.
All right. Now, when you received these, when you received the tapes, would you describe for me, to the best of your recollection, how you went about transcribing them and translating them? Would you listen with earphones and type, or what?
Well, we were furnished with earphones, because if you turn it up at full blast, the neighbors would wonder what the heck is going on.
All right.
So we had the earphones, and then I would do this. First, with the tapes would come the Spanish transcript.
All right. Now, would you describe what it looked like, how many copies of it, and so on?
Well, we had one copy, right? Just the yellow sheets. One copy of the yellow, saying, for instance, Spanish starts at number 3.
All right.
That means you run the tape for 3 feet, and Spanish starts, which didn't interest us, because it had been already transcribed. Transcribed.
Okay.
The yellow sheet. So, but then, as you go along, there it says there Russo, because one of the Spanish transcribers would put down Russian.
All right.
Then I would watch out for the number in front of it.
All right.
If it says 137, I would let machine run until it hits 137 on the counter.
Yeah, well, right.
Stop the machine and start listening to the conversation in Russian. And then while I'm listening, I'm transcribing at the same time.
All right. So you were translating and then transcribing it.
That's right.
At the same time.
Same thing.
And how did your wife assist you in this?
Well, she assisted me mostly whenever the conversation came in English.
All right.
And sometimes I wouldn't catch the proper inflection or else. Well, she knows English better than I do. Let's put it that way.
And too, if there was anybody that had a slight Southern accent or a slight difference of speech, it was pretty hard for him to pick up what they were saying.
All right. Now, did you type things in rough and then your wife retyped them on any occasion?
That would be a double job, absolutely unnecessary.
All right. So you just sat down and listened to the tape and typed.
That's right. If it ran away with me, then I would stop it and type out what I heard and then start it up again.
All right.
And proceed.
Like a transcriptionist would listening to a dictaphone tape.
Yes.
All right. Now, do you recall specifically having received a tape, getting back to my question that I interrupted myself for, in which a person who you subsequently learned was Lee Harvey Oswald called the Soviet embassy? Do you recall transcribing that tape?
Yes, more or less.
Now, do you, to the best of your recollection, remember whether or not that conversation between the person who subsequently identified himself as Lee Harvey Oswald to the Soviet embassy was a conversation in Russian, or was it a conversation in English?
In English. That's why I put it on.
All right, sir. Now, do you recall the essence of that conversation? Was there anything unusual about that conversation that provoked any type of further action or further interest on the part of anyone in the
group? Do you refer to the previous conversation?
To this first conversation.
Previous one, I don't think there was anything gained from it. Because I think it was rather short, and he was asking, do you remember?
Well, if I recall trying to rely on memory for that many years, his first conversation, he was just trying to make contact to see if he could get into the Russian embassy.
Right. Do you recall the tone of his voice, or do you have an impression from listening to that tape about?
Well, I would say that the first one that came out, it was taken as just an ordinary conversation that he wanted. Most others, is there anyone that speaks English? And they'd say, just a minute, and they try to get a hold of somebody. In the meantime, you're waiting, and they say, well, right at the time, there is no one here that can speak English. Call back later. Well, then, I don't know whether he finally hung up or they did get to talk to somebody at that time or not. But his final, the other conversation that came through, the long one.
But with respect to the first one now, is it your recollection, or to the best of your knowledge, did he identify himself in the first conversation as being Lee Oswald or being Lee Harvey Oswald? Did he identify himself in any way? In the first conversation?
No, he didn't.
No, I think in the first conversation he was just trying to see if he could speak to someone at the embassy.
Right. And now you've both stated that there was a second long conversation. Between the first conversation and the second conversation, were you asked to attempt to determine the identity of this person?
Oh, yes.
All right. Would you describe that, sir?
Well, to the best of my knowledge, we either got a note or was it passed verbally by... I think we got a note, no?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, I think the party that brought the reels, there was a notation made to listen to number so-and-so on tape so-and-so dated, whatever date it was, because each reel had a date and a number. And according to the numbers, then there were the transcripts. Each conversation within that had a number. So you ran the tape until you came to a certain number, and then you listened.
Now, did they want you to, or did they give you any instructions about attempting to determine who the caller was in that case?
Yes, they certainly did. They wanted to know the name of the person. And if we learn the name, to get in touch with them immediately and turn in the transcript, to make a transcript, turn it in, forget about Spanish, Russian, or whatever there was at the reel.
And in other words, this was top priority if we got the name.
All right.
To work on it.
I saw that it was very important to them.
All right, sir. Now, did you receive a second tape with this same individual speaking to anyone at the Soviet embassy?
Well, that's you mean the third conversation.
Right.
Yeah. There was one, but I don't think there was.
No, but there was a second one.
The long one, yeah.
Is the long one. Now, would you describe, I realize we do not have a copy of the transcript of that, but would you describe, to the best of your recollection, how you received that particular transcript? When you received it, was it in the morning?
In the morning.
The tape?
With the usual batch of tapes that were delivered to me.
All right.
This one particular was singled out as a very important one, and they wanted to have the transcript as soon as possible.
All right. So, and then did you start to listen? Would you describe specifically with respect to that tape what you remember?
Well, as far as I know, I think my wife remembers more than I do.
All right.
Because I think she's mistaken slightly about my doing the transcript.
All right.
I might have jotted down several things in pencil.
Right. Was that tape also in English?
Well, that's it.
The tape was in English.
You mean this particular section?
This particular section of the tape, of a conversation between Lee Harvey Oswald and someone at the Soviet embassy.
Yes, it was. That's why she was doing it.
All right. Now, Ms. Tarasov, do you recall that particular tape, the second long tape on Lee Harvey Oswald?
Yes,
in which
I
he
do.
Identified himself. Would you please?
Because my husband asked me if I would confirm what he had typed, or transcribed, I should say, from the tape, and which I did. I listened, and we both got the same feeling that this was something that should be turned in immediately.
Right.
And if I'm not mistaken, to rely on my memory, that he also had given his name, that who the caller was.
They wanted the name, definitely.
They asked. They usually ask who's calling, and he identified himself. And in this way, we felt that it was really top priority to be notified our contact. And they, in turn, came by and picked it up. And once it left our hands, why, from there on, we don't know what happened.
All right. But now I want to go back and ask you some specific questions relating to that tape. Do you recall who would have put, which one of you would have put that tape on the reel? Put that reel on the recording machine.
Would have gone, oh, God. Well, I usually did it.
All right.
That's his work.
All right. And then you listened to it and you typed?
No, I asked her to sit down, to listen to it, and to type it out.
All right. And do you recall, Mrs. Tarasoff, which typewriter you would have used in typing that up?
Well, now, wait a minute. If Horace was transcribing it and it was English, he would probably have transcribed it and typed it. But then listening to it again, there may have been some corrections or certain, as I said,
well,
sometimes...
Well, you typed it out.
I typed, well, all right, if I typed it out, then I typed it out on the typewriter that you always used.
Which one, the standard one or the...
The one that was issued to you.
Yes, you sure it wasn't our portable?
Or it could have been the portable, because, yes, you know, sometimes if the typewriter went, you use the portable.
Yes, I prefer.
Because we had quite a few breakdowns with the equipment that we had to work with. It was a little sort of...
All right, but do you recall... Do one of you recall typing that?
Well, it would be me.
Yes. All right.
I would say it would be me, because Horace would have difficulty in picking up anybody that had a slight, as I say, accent or muffled voice.
And do you recall that the conversation, Mrs. Tarasoff, again, I don't want to be repetitive, but I want to make it clear. You recall that the conversation was in English?
Oh, definitely.
All right. And do you recall ever putting anything in the transcript? Any editorial comments about Oswald's Russian being poor?
No way.
No.
There were no comments. There were no comments made. What was typed was what was being said by this individual.
Verbatim, they wanted.
No. Everything was typed. There was nothing put in that would be our opinion or our version of the conversation.
Do you recall from listening to this conversation, from the intonation of the voice, from the substance of the conversation, whether you had any impression about what type of person was making this call? Was this a nut, or how would you describe the person making the call that identified himself as being Lee Harvey Oswald?
Well, actually, I would describe him as just being a person that wanted to get out of the country. I mean, he did not want to stay in Mexico. That was certain.
All right.
He wanted to leave the country, and he had no desire to... He did state that he did not want to return to the U.S. That much I remember.
All right.
He was contacting one or two embassies trying to get financial aid in order to leave the Mexico City, where he was at the time.
All right.
And what his final destination was at that time, I don't know, because we never did get any further information as to whether he was given any financial aid of any kind from either the Russians or the Cubans. I understand he went to both.
Do you recall whether or not he said anything about how he got to Mexico City or what his financial status was or anything? I know I'm asking you to search your memory,
yes.
But do you recall anything about that?
His financial status at the time, if I remember, was he did say he was broke.
All right.
And he had very little money left. And he was seeking a financial aid to be transported to some foreign country. And... Now, the thing is, I believe either he said it or we had read it in the paper then when it all came out, because the article did appear in a paper there, like this news, that he did come down by bus. Now, whether it was mentioned in the transcript or whether I had read it in the paper.
That's it.
So I won't commit myself that it was on the transcript, but it was that I had...
To the best of your recollection, is it fair to say that he wanted financial assistance?
Yes,
that he told them that he didn't have any money?
True.
All right. Do you remember, and I realize, again, we don't have the transcript before us, and I'm asking you to recall from your memory, but do you recall his saying anything about giving them information in exchange for being transported out of the United States, out of Mexico?
No, as far as I can recollect, there was nothing said about any information.
It's usually
the he, as far as I can recall, he was without work.
All right. It's usually the nutty types that always ask, well, can we get some more money for our information that we can sell you or stuff like this, but I don't think it was.
No,
would you describe Oswald from hearing, I assume, a number of conversations over a number of years, how would you characterize
Oswald? I would say that judging from the tone of his voice,
we're going to have, all right, let me just stop this tape and turn it over. No, it goes on.
As I said before, judging from the tone of his voice, I thought that he was a very cool individual. He was determined. He, what would you describe it best? The picture that I had of Oswald was like a coiled snake ready to strike. That's what really I remember it from the conversation. He sounded like he was quite angry about something, but at the same time he kept cool. But you could detect the note of this anger in his voice about something, but whether he wasn't being given a fair treatment by the people that he was talking to or why, I couldn't say.
Do you recall whether he told the Soviets that they really ought to talk to him or anything to that effect?
That again, no.
No.
You don't remember? Don't you?
Right. I wouldn't say that he was...
All right, do you recall anything about his asking about what news they had about his visa or anything like that? Do you recall any of that type of a conversation?
No.
Okay. Now, would you describe for me the type of paper that this was typed on?
You mean the
transcript?
The transcript?
The transcript. Was it plain white paper or?
Well, the type sheet would be just plain white paper.
No, excuse me, the type sheet was U.S. government bond.
No, they didn't want us to use that. Yeah, but we did occasionally.
Were they?
Yeah.
Nine times out of ten, that's what we wound up with.
Do you remember?
Until we had to go out and buy
it
on our own.
I was lugging a whole bunch of this paper.
But from the beginning, for a long period of time, that's what you had to use. Till we had to went out and start buying it on our own.
Yes. Then two copies of the
Two carbon copies. All right.
You want to see it?
Yes.
I'll show you. All
right. If we could have that. Now, at any time in this conversation, did Lee Harvey Oswald, were you able to identify to whom Oswald was speaking?
I myself wouldn't, because I had very little contact with the transcribing of the reels.
Right.
That would be actually my husband's duties to recognize the voice.
Now, if your husband recognized the voice of the person inside,
mm-hmm.
would he, on the transcript, then identify that
Definitely.
Person?
Definitely. It would also be on the transcript.
All right.
So-and-so spoke to so-and-so.
All right. That was a normal procedure
yes.
then, that if
you could identify the two parties that were speaking to each other, then you were also... He would transcribe the names, include the names in the transcript.
All right, ma'am. Now, if in this case, do you recall whether or not the person to whom Lee Harvey Oswald was speaking was identified?
I don't really know.
All right.
Because if I was doing the typing of it, and if I came to it,
I would automatically rerun the reel in order for Boris to listen to the, tell me if he could recognize who he was speaking to. Now, I don't recall whether he did recognize who he was speaking to or not, but there was also a close resemblance to several voices that sounded alike in the embassy amongst the people that were speaking. So sometimes it was very hard to identify the, I think there were three that almost had the same tone of voice and speaking habits.
Would it have been the normal procedure?
Well, it would sort of be very easy to, let's say, weed out who the English-speaking people were, because there were very few that spoke English.
Two copies.
So,
Right, but on this particular tape, do either of you remember being able to identify the person to whom Lee Harvey Oswald was speaking?
Unfortunately not.
All right, sir. And you did not, I take it then, if you could not identify the person, then you would not have put any name on the transcript of someone that he had been speaking to.
Do you remember putting any names on?
Well, if you were not certain,
yes,
you right. would put the name, but then you would put it in parens. Mm-hmm. And what did we have? A question mark?
I think.
Now, if you couldn't identify the person, what would you put? What would you use, initials or?
No, we just put down the men outside, or if the call comes in, that's it, men outside. If somebody calls from the embassy and we don't know his name, we can't identify him or can't recognize his voice, then we put down MI or men inside.
All right. Do you recall in this case, or if, well, strike that. We're going to have to change tapes here in just a minute, so let's go off the record and shut the tape recorders off before the, after a break for lunch. Were either of you ever asked at any time for your opinion as to the identity of the individual to whom Lee Harvey Oswald was speaking on that second tape?
I don't think anybody asked us that question.
Well, if they asked me, I wouldn't know, because to begin with, mm-hmm. I never worked on the tapes constantly to have any sufficient amount of time to recognize voices. That would be Boris's, my husband's, part. He would be the one that would be able to identify whoever was speaking, if it was possible to identify him.
Now, sir, you have shown me some Huron copy set papers, which is a carbon set, and you stated that you made an original and two copies of all of your transcripts that you had transcribed and translated and transcribed. With respect to the Oswald tape, did you do the same thing with that tape, that is, make an original and two carbon copies?
That's a rule.
Right.
Before, it used to be three copies, but then they saw there was no need to have so many. So they came down to two copies, original and two copies.
Nasser, do you recall what happened? Do either of you recall what happened once you had the second Oswald tape transcribed?
Well,
what happened then? Did you make a call to someone or what?
Well, after transcribing it and typing it up, and the name was mentioned, and as we said previously, there was some indication from the on the reel that this could be of interest or very pertinent. So we had contacted our contact that we had for any emergency of this type.
Do you recall who that was?
Well, I wouldn't want to mention the name if you don't mind.
All right.
It was just a phone number, and sometimes there would be just passing on the message in case the party wasn't there.
All right. Without trying to pry further, is that person an employee of the CIA?
Oh, yes.
Is that person still employed by the CIA?
That I wouldn't know.
All right.
That one, that much I wouldn't know.
Right. But you called this unidentified person.
Yes.
And what transcribed, what transpired then?
Well, they in turn would come pass by the house and pick it up and take it to the embassy.
No, I took the real transcription to a coroner, I remember that.
Oh, you took it personally? I thought they came by and picked it up. Because as a rule, they would come by and pick it up.
Probably. It must have been the other one. Now, unrelated.
Do you recall that on the same day that you got that tape, that you transcribed that tape, and it was delivered to someone that day?
That's exactly...
The same day?
The same day, very shortly after it's been finished.
All right, sir. Now, since that time, now that was an original and two copies.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Right. Would either of you be able to identify the original transcript or a carbon copy of the transcript if you saw it?
I believe so.
Yeah, you know, because there was a certain procedure in how you would type it up.
All right. Would you be able to determine at this point in time, 13 years later, if you saw the original, whether or not it had been altered in any way from what you recall typing it?
That would be hard to determine because actually the transcript was made verbatim. Whatever one party said, that was typed. Whatever the other party said also was typed. There wasn't anything put in other than what was, both people
or
were talking
out. There were no editorial comments put in?
No, none whatsoever.
And I believe you said, sir, nothing was taken out?
No, there was nothing omitted and nothing added.
They asked for verbatim, you've got to put everything in it.
All right.
Whether they said, oh, ah, or
yes.
Everything.
Yes, formations.
Now, you delivered that. Did you ever use any, in the transcription of those tapes, did you ever use any code words or any phrases or anything like that that you would add to it?
No.
You would use just your MI for man inside or MO for man outside.
SOP.
Abbreviations.
Mm-hmm. Well, I used to. First, when a person was identified,
right.
Let's say Yitzko, instead of putting down every time when he starts to talk, Yitzko said that, Yitzko went answered this, Yitzko, I will put down YAT.
Right.
Abbreviation.
Same time and work and whatnot.
All right, sir. Now, you personally handed the tape and the three and the original and two copies to this person.
Who was if I delivered it, I did.
All right,
if it was picked up, maybe it would be
the same thing. Okay. Whether it was delivered or picked up,
Yes, but I mean, would it be you or me?
No, it wouldn't be me.
I mean, if they came to the house.
Well, it didn't matter because 9 times out of 10 they'd want to talk to you anyway.
Either way, it would be personally delivered to them.
Oh, yes.
Right.
It would be from hand to hand.
To anyone.
All right. And then, after you delivered that transcript and the tape, did you any time subsequent to that ever see that transcript again or hear that tape again?
No. None whatsoever.
On cases of that nature, which were sensitive like the Oswald case, was it a normal procedure to save certain tapes?
No, not we can recollect. I don't think we ever saved any tapes.
No, but I don't mean you save. I mean the CIA save.
That I don't know. Whatever left our house and they picked up.
The minute it leaves our hands.
They could have erased everything or they could have saved things. We don't know.
All right.
As I say, whatever left our hands and went into the hands of the other party, we never knew what happened. Whether they kept it, erased it, burned it, or destroyed the whole work. This we never knew.
Do you know anything about the filing system, how they file these transcripts? Did either one of you ever have anything to do with that?
No.